Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, and welcome to WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. Come explore news, information, entertainment, and ideas from a pagan point of view around the globe. Tune in every night for interviews and lively discussions on current events, philosophies, traditional and not-so-traditional practices, DIY projects, the who's who and what's what of our growing pagan community right here on Blog Talk Radio in English and now in Spanish.
Hello, everyone. This is Samara Luna.
And this is Serenity Moonraven.
And this is the Tree of Life Hour. Ravenfire is MIA, missing in action at the moment. I don't know where she is. She was supposed to be here. And actually, our guest has not shown up yet either. And she should be here shortly, hopefully. We're doing a special show tonight about pagan health. And our guest tonight, who actually may be calling in right now, is Dr. Kimberly Kerner, who is in the anthropology department, I believe, at California State University, who is doing the Pagan Survey, and she's actually doing part two now. So I am actually going to play a short message and check and see if that is her calling in. So I will play the I'm going to play a little ad right now, and we will be right back.
Pagans Tonight Radio Network needs your help in creating a pagan interface library in South Africa. The Karelian Nativist Tradition is sponsoring the creation of this library, but all paths are more than welcome to participate in this effort. Why South Africa? Great question. One book in South Africa costs the equivalent of 2 days of food there, and safety for pagans is also a concern. The library is seeking interfaith nonfiction and fiction books in good condition. Also welcome are pagan and interfaith CDs and DVDs, tarot card decks, divination tools, etc. Please note, due to international shipping rules, we cannot accept herbs, incense, candles, or perishables. So what's this got to do with you? There are several ways you and your community can help us succeed. First, you can donate some of your pagan books, whether fiction or nonfiction. Look at your bookshelf and ask yourself, if you haven't read a book or referred to it in a year or more, do you really need to hang on to it? Do you belong to a group? Then consider holding a book drive as part of your group's normal activities. Do you have a circle of pagan friends? You can promote the book mission by spreading the word through email and social media networks like Facebook and Twitter. The deadline for shipping donations is March 31st, 2013. All donations will be combined and shipped to South Africa in April 2013. Ship your items to Lori Denman, 11250 Old St. Augustine Road, Suite 15, number 150, Jacksonville, Florida, 32257, USA. Second, you can join Paperback Swap, swap.com, and create credits, which can be used to get books to the library. You can request whatever books you like to be shipped to the postal address I just mentioned, or you can donate your credits to the library itself so they can fill out the selection. Please donate credits to Lori D. Her username is GSCABOOSE. And finally, you can make a monetary donation to help cover the shipping costs to South Africa at karelian.com/donate.htm. Please be sure to earmark your donation for the South Africa Book Mission. To find out more about the mission, please visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/groups/CNTBooks. Or email your questions to cntbookmission@gmail.com.
All right, we are back, everyone, and our guest, Dr. Kim Kerner, called in. Hello, Kim.
Hello.
Hi. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Kim Kerner. I'm a druid, and I'm also a cultural anthropologist who specializes in looking at healthcare systems and environmental policy. I'm in the anthropology department at California State University, Northridge.
All right. And can you tell us a little bit of your background with paganism?
Sure. I would say that in some ways, anthropology and religious studies in my undergraduate and early graduate years led me to paganism, and eventually I came back around and started the Pagan Health Survey. I found out about paganism beyond, you know, except I'd known about Wicca for a while, but it wasn't sort of where I felt I fit. And so for a long time, I just didn't feel like I fit quite anywhere. And, you know, mostly practiced an eclectic mix of, you know, stuff of my own making and some Buddhist things. And then around 2003, found out about modern Druidry while teaching a class on anthropology of religion and doing some research on modern nature spirituality traditions in order to put together a lecture for the class. And so I had found the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids through that in around 2003, and for a couple of years just read everything that I could kind of get my hands on, which was a lot because I went through the University of California library system to sort of pull in everything I could, and joined the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids in 2005. And then I was solitary until 2009 when a grove finally started in my region in Southern California. And at the same time, a lot of things happened in California for the Druid community that year. So we also started a large gathering of seed groups and groves in 2009. And by 2010, I was not only not solitary, but had started the Pagan Health Survey as well as a result of a call for papers on minority religious traditions and health put out by the American Public Health Association, which a colleague of mine had said, hey, wait a minute, you're pagan and you do medical anthropology. You should put in a paper about this. And I tried to find someone else in the pagan community who perhaps had done more research than I was and would be better prepared to speak at such an event. But it ended up, I couldn't find anyone, so I ended up putting together the survey, and now it's had its second run, and I'm just very excited to have so much information on the pagan community, and I'm in the process of putting together some articles that will help guide, hopefully, healthcare professionals' cultural competency in dealing with people of non-mainstream minority traditions like ours.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit more about the survey, what all you learned from it. Well, give us in general what you learned from it, the type of questions I guess you asked, things like that.
Sure. Well, the first iteration of the Pagan Health Survey happened in 2010. I had about 1,600 respondents, which is a really good sample size. That means that the results really spoke to, statistically spoke to the complete pagan community, and I had people respond evenly from all across the nation. So that was really exciting. And most of the first survey was exploring basic questions around how do pagans conceptualize health and healing? How do we think about the healing process? What kinds of practices and treatments and practitioners do we seek out? And as a result, I got enough information in order to pull together a sort of composite model of how a lot of pagans think about health and healing, which is that unlike a sort of conventional biomedical model, pagans are concerned with a holistic treatment of the body, mind, and spirit. For the most part, they're interested in integrative and complementary practices. So they tend to integrate biomedical practices with a wide variety of other things, ranging from spiritual healing to magic to the use of herbs and massage and so on, at a higher frequency than the rest of Americans do. And it also began to come out in some of the responses I was getting, although I didn't directly ask the question, that a number of pagans were concerned about prejudice and discrimination in seeking care because of their religious status, their minority religious status. So this second pagan health survey really focused much more on not only confirming these models but also of health and healing, but also asking people for their information more deeply about if they've experienced prejudice or discrimination events, how exactly they move through their process of care seeking. So where do they go first, next, and so on. And what kinds of support they're getting from the pagan community. And it's quite a lot of people said they get a lot of feeling of supported by other pagans in the community or through just their practices themselves, that they feel that that gives them a significant sense of support in maintaining their optimal wellness.
So in either of these surveys, were there any special health needs that face pagans in our communities?
Were there any special what? I'm sorry.
We were just wondering if the survey was able to identify any health risks, maybe that specifically faced that you found that specifically pagans faced, or that there was a higher risk of.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that the survey collected to say whether or not there's certain risks that we face. I think there are certainly certain challenges or difficulties that we face in our community that are a bit unique to our community. But this isn't the same thing as saying that there's a higher health risk. So, you know, I didn't collect sort of medical information on everyone in order to assess higher or lower risk than the general population. I might have some ways of getting at that information, at least vaguely, once I completely process all the data from the second survey. But it's still ongoing. So I haven't started, I've done sort of some preliminary data processing, but the full analysis of the data on that second survey won't happen until summer after the survey has closed at the end of March, and I have some time to go through and categorize all of the information and analyze it. Certainly the pagan community faces certain challenges or difficulties that are not necessarily unique to only pagans, but are unique to minority populations. So the challenge of people trying to access care, especially if they already are facing barriers to access, such as being low income or living in a rural area where there's not as many options in health care, on top of feeling a sense of being stigmatized or marginalized as a group because of their minority religious status, seems to be more of an issue than it would be for your average American who is of a Christian Christian religious tradition.
Yeah. Just so we can understand some of the statistics that you actually got from the first survey, what were some of the, what are some examples of some of the questions that you asked? And if you said that, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. So this is the first survey or the second that you're...
The first one, we'll go into the second one in a minute. I want to try to keep them a little bit separate.
Okay.
So people don't get confused because you don't have the data on the second one yet.
Right. And I have some preliminary things I can share about the second survey that I pulled together for a presentation recently at the current conference on pagan studies. But I don't have the sort of fine-grained detail on it yet because the survey is still up and running. So I haven't done a lot of the qualitative data analysis, although I have a few statistics about the trends that are coming out. In the first pagan health survey, I focused a lot on how people thought about health and healing and the kinds of treatments and practitioners that they chose, engaged with, and why they chose that. So a lot of the questions focused on asking people to write three words or phrases, for example, that come to mind to them when I say the word doctor, or that come to mind when I say the word health. This is partly how when you gather, I added up about 20,000 individual pieces of words and phrases this way for a few of these keywords like doctor, health, medicine. But it's helped inform a way to understand a composite model, sort of an average way of viewing these things, which was to see health as really an integrative, holistic endeavor toward optimizing wellness, rather than fixing a body part when it's broken, which is a very common biomedical way of thinking about things. And there was a very high use of medical doctors as well as mental health practitioners, such as psychologists and therapists, but people often reported being uncomfortable with them as well, not having a huge amount of trust of their judgment, being concerned that they weren't very responsive in answering the patient's questions or in discussing recent research, things like this. So overall, these questions helped me to understand that pagans are predominantly using biomedicine. You know, they go to the doctor, they go to their mental health practitioner if they have access, if they have insurance and money to do so. But there's not an optimal fit between how that practitioner interacts with them and the way they would like.
So it's kind of like they're wanting more of a joining between the holistic and the, you know, medical, and they're having trouble finding that?
Yes, I think predominantly people would prefer a more integrative system of healthcare, which is very difficult, as most people know and have experienced, that's very difficult to find unless you have quite a lot of money, and then it's still usually not very integrated. You have to kind of integrate it yourself. These different types of treatments and practitioners are usually not all in the same system. And I think on top of that, and perhaps even more than that, a lot of pagans expressed that they wanted a cooperative, collaborative partnership with their healthcare practitioner to optimize their wellness. And so, you know, that much of our modern healthcare system is based on very, very short amounts of time between the doctor and patient, and the doctor being sort of guided through asking standardized questions and then telling the patient, okay, do this and that, and here's a prescription. In the pagan model, this felt disempowering and ineffective. And that's not particularly surprising when we look at how most pagans sort of construct the same model for spiritual purposes as well, that they want a collaborative, you know, most groups sort of work collaboratively and everyone is considered a partner in constructing ritual, for example, or constructing a gathering or a workshop. And so a lot of pagans were saying, this is what we'd also like with our health, is that my doctor sees me as a competent partner, and we work together to find the best solutions to optimize my wellness.
Right. I think I've been pretty actually lucky in the past to have a doctor that is actually very receptive of holistic things. He'll actually tell me, go ahead and do it. Let me know how it goes. I'm interested.
Yeah.
So I've been very lucky when it comes to that.
And some of this depends as well on our location, and, you know, people in rural areas often report that it's a little bit harder. In many rural areas, there just aren't that many options. And it's difficult to know, you know, when I look at the data, it's difficult to know if people's fears about being out of the broom closet are justified given their location or if it's residual. it's very difficult to know. You know, I know many pagans who aren't out of the broom closet at all because they're afraid of losing their job or, you know, having problems within their communities. And then I know pagans who came out of the broom closet and experienced none of those negative effects, including myself. So there's no, that's a tough call as well, in that every person seems to have a slightly different desire for whether or not they want various people in their lives to know about their religious beliefs and whether they feel this is relevant for their healthcare practitioner to know, and their comfort level with educating their practitioners about their beliefs and practices. So it's very difficult for me to make recommendations to, you know, I've had a lot of people say, well, what do you recommend people do? And I have an easier time making recommendations to the healthcare community about building cultural competency to deal with people who have different beliefs than the mainstream than I do to sort of tell individual people whether it's right for them to attempt to have, you know, more openness with their doctors about their beliefs and practices.
Right. And I don't think I've actually ever come straight out and told my doctor I'm pagan. I think the only time I've ever brought it up in a medical situation is when I've had, you know, gone in to have surgery and they ask you, you know, about if you want somebody to come in if something goes wrong and all that. And I've told them my religious preferences then. But I don't think I've ever actually told any of my physicians, you know, straight out that I was pagan.
Yeah, and so much of that depends on, as you're saying, the context of what you're trying to get help for and whether or not it feels relevant. So, you know, I see no point, you know, if I have a, you know, a sinus infection or something and I'm just going to my doctor to just, you know, basically get a prescription and to clear up the sinus infection, I really see no point in having a long discussion about my beliefs and practices. It seems to be for most people much more of a challenge if they have a serious medical condition where, you know, they might want some kind of religious or spiritual support in a hospital, or in cases of mental health where it can often be very much more difficult for a therapist to work with a client if they don't really know anything about this client's spirituality or overall worldview. But it is, there's also this situation that in some parts of the country, it seems that it's a very localized thing. Some areas have better care than others in terms of accepting patients' use of complementary and alternative medicine. So some people said, you know, my doctor does fine with that. I'll just tell them I'm also doing, you know, using this herbal supplement or this dietary plan, and they'll work with me. And other people reported that they were sort of ridiculed or discouraged from, you know, integrating health as being more than a biomedical model, and also, you know, using herbs or exercise or a dietary supplement or something like that to assist them in optimizing their wellness. And this is, you know, this is a problem that is happening nationwide. There's now a federal agency that looks at national use of alternative and complementary medical practices, and this is getting to be quite high among a variety of ethnic groups. Pagans just sort of are that much higher in their use of complementary and alternative medicine than their non-pagan counterparts.
And in your opinion, so I don't know if you actually feel comfortable answering this or not, but in your opinion, do you think that a lot of doctors now are being more accepting of the holistic and alternative medicines? in starting to maybe draw on some of that themselves than what they would have been 10, 15 years ago?
You know, I really don't know. I think that probably varies region to region and even by where doctors are trained. Some of the interviews that I conducted with pagans who are also healthcare professionals, whether in biomedicine or in the alternative and complementary medical traditions, most of them said, you know, it depends on the area that a person comes from in their training. So some medical schools are very open-minded and, you know, bring in complementary and alternative medical practitioners to talk to students. It's a much more integrated medical model for the medical students who go through it, and other medical schools don't do this. And so it seems that, as far as I understood from the interviews I've conducted with healthcare professionals, it's very scattered at this point in the States. I think certainly in my region, doctors don't bat an eyelash usually if you say you're going to be, you know, using massage or acupuncture or going to the Chinese medical doctor for an herbal supplement or something like this. But I live in Los Angeles. So, you know, it's an incredibly huge, heavily populated city, and we have an incredible array of immigrant groups and ethnic groups and different religions. So I think they've had a longer time to sort of get used to having everybody imaginable come through their doors. And I've never lived off of the West Coast, so I can't speak to more rural areas where they might have more of a challenge, you know, having that mindset in doctors, simply because the doctors don't necessarily have to confront that diversity quite as often. And so, you know, it's possible that in those areas, doctors who weren't trained to have that open-mindedness about other kinds of, you know, medical practices may practice for some years without ever really opening their mind to it.
Yeah, it's kind of cool to, I guess, live in a melting pot area. I know that those of us that are the host for the show, Serenity, I, and Raven Fire, who actually just joined us. Hi, Raven.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. But we actually live in the Louisville, Kentucky area,
mm-hmm.
and it's sort of become a melting pot in its own right. There's a lot of different cultures here, and we've actually, at least most people that I've talked to in the Louisville area have actually found it to be very accepting of pagans.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, I don't know how many of the Druids I've met from the South are sort of out of the broom closet, but I know there's just a ton of Druids in the South. They're finally, I think, having their first large gathering this coming May. So I know, you know, when I looked at the demographics of the Pagan Health Survey as well, about 20% of the pagan population in the state is in the South, which makes sense if you think about it. There's a very long history in the South of sort of root doctoring and folk magic traditions.
Right. Now, you brought up the demographics. Just out of curiosity, as far as the demographics for your survey, what did you find as far as, what was the percentage of the lower incomes and the rural locations that you found on the survey that you got back for the first one? Because I know you brought that up a few times with as far as things that might impede people going to the doctor and such.
Yeah. Let me go ahead and actually pull that up, because, of course, I don't have everything memorized. So.
I can understand that. I've done a huge research project also, so believe me, I completely understand.
there's a lot of statistics that came out of this. So some of them I have, you know, memorized, and then some I have the overall picture in my head. I don't have the exact statistics. So In terms of rurality, I might actually have to look in a different document for that. But I can say that in terms of the other demographic variables, about 3/4 of the respondents were women, most identified as white, about 95% identified as white, and the predominant ethnic group that identified as non-white or also as, you know, as white and something else were Native American, which was about 10%. Most of the respondents were between the ages of 36 and 50. That was almost 40% of the respondents, and they had been, the average respondent had been practicing paganism for 17 years. So that was really interesting for me to see. I didn't expect it to be quite that long of a time period, but it was, and,
wow,
so, and it's been great. Consistent to the second survey as well. So it really is capturing a certain, at least a certain slice of paganism that is a community that's been going on for quite some time.
I'm not sure
where that noise is coming. Some background noise from someone, and I'm not sure where it came from.
When she said that the average person was practicing paganism for 17 years. Wow, that's wow. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you think about it, the average respondent is also in their mid-30s to 50. So this makes a lot of sense, right, when we consider the growth of the pagan movement and the history of it, that you're basically looking at, you know, folks who became pagan, you know, in their late teens or through their, you know, 30s. About 20 years ago,
right?
So during that upswing in the 80s and 90s with the internet and all these people who were these tiny little relatively hidden pockets of people finding each other and starting to sort of really create a much larger, more accelerated movement. So that was that was really interesting. And with the second survey, I asked more questions about sort of integration with the pagan community. So it was really the demographics stayed the same, but it was really interesting to see that about, you know, 45% of folks were completely solitary. They don't even attend large pagan gatherings on an annual basis, and another 40% or so meet at least a few times with a consistent pagan group. So you also have this sort of split in the community for whatever reason. I mean, the survey doesn't ask that question, why, you know, but you have this community that's held together and has some consistent trends in things like how they think about health and healing and their experiences in combining spiritual healing with their idea of physical wellness. And yet you've got almost half of the community never actually coming into community in a face-to-face setting. So it's a very interesting way of looking at the growth of a religious community as well in terms of paganism as an umbrella for a bunch of new religious movements that partly, I think, because of the internet and media like podcasting and blogging and all of these things, we're able to sort of grow a movement without really seeing each other all that much, you know, where a lot of us are dedicated, but we're, you know, but people are dedicated as solitaries. Go ahead.
Sorry, a question popped into my head. Did you see any big variation between, I don't know if, like, the survey really answered this question, but at least in the first survey, did you see a big difference between what people were experiencing health-wise and healthcare-wise between people who are part of, like, a coven or a grove or what have you versus people who were dedicated as solitaries?
I actually can say that, that's one of the questions I have for the second survey. So I do have the data in the second survey to be able to compare solitaries versus those who have a regular group that they practice with and the impact to at least how they feel about being supported in their health. And that is something that I plan on looking at this summer. Is the part of what I'm working on is a paper that would hopefully go to the Pomegranate, which is an international journal of pagan studies, that would be an accessible paper to people in the pagan community as well, that would speak to this question of pagan community as healing community. Because what I was hearing from people over and over, and has been noted by other pagan studies scholars, Sabina Magliocco and Wendy Griffin and, a variety of people who have published books on the pagan movement from an ethnographic perspective, is that a lot of paganism revolves around healing the self, healing others, healing a sense of getting out a sense of a more whole identity, and healing the earth. So to me, it's very it'll be very interesting to look at the question of is there any variance between people who are getting together to do this face-to-face versus people who identify with the movement but are practicing as solitaries?
That's actually very interesting to find out like that about the solitary versus people that are in covens, groves, kindreds, whatever.
Yeah. Circles,
so,
all of our,
yeah,
our different ways of describing
the different
the
labels
that we can. Yes, yeah.
So you told us a little bit about the second survey, and I know you said it's still open. So if someone...
I took the survey last night myself, actually.
Yay!
It's not a conflict of interest?
Huh?
I said it's not considered a conflict of interest?
Well, no, I was doing research for the show, and for our listeners who don't know, I'm a nurse, so I saw it, and I'm like, oh, yeah.
Oh. I didn't realize that was you talking right
then. Yeah.
No, I wouldn't say it's a conflict of interest. In fact, about 15% of the people who have taken it
Well, I actually thought, Kim, it was you that had said that.
What? Oh, I guess my Kentucky draw disappeared for a moment or something.
I guess so. I guess I didn't pick it up for some reason. So, sorry. I just disappeared somewhere mentally for a moment. So, yeah, we actually have a joke amongst us that there is a huge part of the pagan community that probably has ADD or ADHD.
Well, there's a huge population in the states in general that has ADD or ADHD, you know.
Oh, look, squirrel.
It's so fun. Yeah. He likes to say, oh, look, squirrel. But, yeah, we like to chase squirrels on the show, too. how about we go ahead and take a break, and when we come back, we'll go into the survey part two a little bit more and how people can take the survey and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so,
great.
I am going to play a song. I'm just going to pick one from somewhere. let's see. I know there's some people in chat that really like Days of Bard, so I am going to play, how about the Pipes of Dan? I haven't heard that in a while. So here we go, Dave the Bard or Dom the Bard, however you want to say it, hikes the pan.
My Mystic Gems offers a unique and unusual variety of vintage and modern jewelry items. My handcrafted creations include steampunk jewelry, crystal and elemental designs, cosplay accessories, wish wands, and beautiful bullets, my signature line of piece jewelry. My designs are perfect for all gift occasions, including holidays, birthdays, and anniversaries, as well as bridesmaids and groomsmen's gifts for weddings. I do offer custom pieces and will work with you to create something special just for you. Visit my website at mymysticgems.com to find links to both my Etsy and Artbar stores online. You can contact me at mymysticgems@gmail.com.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. And that was Dave the Bard, or Dom the Bard, however you want to say it, and his song Pipes the Pan. And hopefully everyone made it through the break. And actually, Kim, I had a question for you real quick before we went to the second survey.
Sure.
You were talking about that pomegranate, I think is what you called it.
Yes.
And you said it was a pagan study?
Yes,
it's
the International Journal for Pagan Studies, and it's a peer-reviewed academic journal devoted to pagan studies.
I will have to look that up. I'm a psychology major, so I'm actually pretty interested in that.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't say major. I've graduated, so I'm a psychology graduate.
There you go. And I should also let you know that if you plan on going into clinical practice, there is now an Association of Pagan Therapists. So also, if any of your listeners are clinicians in the mental health arena and want to join their meetup group, they started out of LA, but they do conference calls, and they're working on putting together materials for cultural competency for clinicians, and you know, little trainings for clinicians in how to treat pagan, you know, how to better work with pagan clients, and forming linkages between clinicians and pagan clergy and all sorts of wonderful things.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Now, is that only for pagan therapists, or is that also pagan-friendly therapists?
I think it started as therapists who are also pagan, but I can't really, you know, I'm just a scholar affiliate with that group, but I would imagine that they're pretty open to also working with pagan-friendly therapists. I think part of what they're hoping to do is create more of those people, you know, to reach out to their colleagues and also reach out to the pagan community in order to be a good bridge. And there's also somebody who is just starting to get off the ground, an Association of Pagan Healthcare Practitioners, Providers, and Professionals for the physical health folks. So I'm really excited about that, as well as having a variety of people who've asked for my data sets, which I'm happy to share with other researchers who want to query the data for certain things. I'm happy to provide data from the survey for other researchers as well. You know, I have a graduate student, for example, who did her research on pagans in recovery and did a qualitative study and interviews and things like that. And then I was also able to give her some larger scale data from the survey for her to look at. So I'm really excited when other people can have a use for this stuff other than just me. There's only so much, there's a lot of data and only so much that I personally, how fast I can put something out on it. So to me, it's wonderful if other researchers or clinicians can use what I've put together to also do work in advancing cultural competency and rights for pagans.
That's awesome. So tell us a little bit. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm like an Association of Pagan Healthcare Providers. That is excellent, because that is something that I think is very needed. I know from personal experience, there's a lot of pagan nurses out there. There's not a lot of pagan nurses here out of the broom closet. So,
yeah, this is what I've also heard, and it was very interesting that when I
presented my original work with the first survey at the American Public Health Association, I actually had sort of private meetings with pagans who were biomedical researchers or doctors as well, who said, look, I want to meet with you and have a chat, but I can't be out of the broom closet, so you're going to have to pretend, you know, that if anybody comes up and from, you know, my work or something, just pretend we're talking about something else. So it was very interesting for me, you know, I understand those concerns, but it was very interesting for me because I'm in a field where it's completely fine to be in a minority religious tradition. So, you know, in anthropology, you're considered a little weird if you're religious at all in many departments. But if you're already in the sort of, you know, spiritual or religious camp, anything, you know, really is fine. There's not a stigma against being in a new religious movement or a nature spirituality movement.
Right. So tell us a little bit more about the Pagan Health Survey Part 2 and how people can fund it.
Sure. So the Pagan Health Survey 2 is focusing on a number of questions that arose out of the first one. You know, first I'm sort of taking the models and trends that came out of the data of the first survey, and I'm asking people how strongly they agree with that. So part of it is affirming the strength to which these ways of thinking about health and healing are widely understood. And this not only helps me sort of discuss the trends in the pagan community, but it can help practitioners better understand the worldview of pagan patients, broadly construed. You know, I mean, there's the famous saying, you get, you know, 10 witches or 10 druids together and ask them a question about what they believe, and you'll get, you know, 11 or 12 answers because, you know, everyone has a different experience, and somewhere in there, somebody's going to think it out a little more fully and change their mind partway through. But there are sort of broad trends that we can speak to, I think, when we consider the patterns of thought and practice that emerge from the pagan community, concerns about empowerment, love of the body and embracing of different body images and types, you know, a sort of sense that the body is sacred and at the same time that many pleasurable things in life are sacred. So there's not this tendency usually to sort of be ascetic in this manner of sort of denying oneself, you know, food or other things that are pleasurable. So I think there's a lot of patterns that we can speak to when we talk to practitioners about who pagans are, in a sense, in that broad way. So this sort of affirms those models. Then it goes into two particular issues that arose out of the first survey, and that is sort of the types of support the pagans feel from their own community and how widely that support is felt. Are there certain groups of people demographically that are more vulnerable to not having support from a religious community? And the other being that I wanted to better understand how people are making choices about where to go for different health-related problems and at what point they feel most helped in that process, as well as understanding if there are certain prejudice or discrimination events that people are experiencing. So the survey really goes much more into depth on those factors and is similar to the first survey in the first few sections of it on the demographics, because this allows me to sort of have a consistent way of looking at the demographic trends in the pagan community, but then sort of rapidly moves on into quite different questions than were asked in the first survey, and it is really meant to be a follow-up, digs deeper into these key questions.
Awesome.
So,
Oh, I'm sorry. We only got about 5 minutes left, so I just wanted real quick. And how can people find the survey to take it?
Yes, it's on SurveyMonkey. So if you go to https://, and then the 2 / www.surveymonkey.com/s/pagan health. And then that'll open that survey. And the survey will be up until the end of March.
Okay. And for our listeners out there, I'm telling you, I took the survey last night. It's painless. It's actually, I actually really liked it. It was really, I thought it was really well thought out and well put together as far as the questions and stuff. But for our listeners out there, you know, I would highly encourage you all to take the survey, take 30 minutes of your time to take the survey so that, you know, we can have this data for our community.
Right.
Okay. And thank you so much. I tried to make it as painless as possible for being a survey that also allows people to really speak their voice. I try to give a lot of space that people can type in their own responses if they wish.
Yeah, no, I was very impressed with the survey, actually. So, because, you know, nurses have to, we have to take all sorts of crazy surveys and this and that and this and that for different things. And, yeah, I was quite impressed with the survey, so.
And real quick, I had opened up your PowerPoint on your website for your current research just to take a look at it. And I noticed that you have a project listed for paganism and sustainability. Can you just do, like, maybe a quick, like, 30-second spiel about that?
Absolutely. And there actually will be a survey that I put out later this year on sustainability, although I don't know that it'll garner as wide a response as the health issues are. My primary, you know, medical anthropology has been so far kind of a close second specialization of mine. My primary specialization was in environmental anthropology. And something that I got very curious about is that in the literature on Native American and other indigenous traditions, a lot of anthropologists and cultural ecologists have speculated that partly what made these cultures sustainable over the long run in terms of how they use natural resources was that these they saw the world oftentimes as filled with spirit. They were animist traditions, and they had a lot of religious rituals about rooting yourself in place and having a sense of personal identity connected to the landscape and to the other beings around you that were not human. And so I got very curious if this happens with pagans as well. I had been to an awful lot of rituals and seen practices that talk about nature spirits, spirits of place, and that are designed to sort of root people in a sense of being in a place. And I'm very curious to see if that also leads toward a greater commitment to sustainable actions. So that survey, I've been going around and looking at various rituals and sort of doing some ethnographic research on the actual ritual practices. And then the survey will be out later this year that combines asking people about different ritual practices that they might engage in, as well as having them do some questions that are coming from ecological footprint analysis work. That ask questions about, you know, how much you recycle and, you know, how much you try and buy your food locally and these sorts of things that are related to sustainability.
Awesome. And real quick, if anyone has any questions or might want to get in contact with you, how can they find you?
Oh, you can get in contact with me most easily through the university. So my email address there is kkirner, so kkirner, at csun.edu. And you can also find me by going to the California State University Northridge website and then just looking for their anthropology department, and I'm under the faculty there.
All right, that's awesome, and we appreciate you coming on the show, and I'm sure we will ask you back again. And So, real quick, Serenity.
Yep, I have the upcoming events that are local to Kentucky, at least. Matrix is a Place of Change. We'll be holding Full Moon on February 25th at 7 p.m. It's an open eclectic circle, and that's at 650 South Shelby Street. CUPS, which is the Unitarian Universalist Pagan Group, will be having Ostara in Lexington on March 16th, and we will be having one in Louisville for Ostara on March
24th. Okay.
And that's all I got.
Okay, awesome. And real quick, Raven, do you want to say what next week's show is about real quick before we take off and let Reverend Dawn and take over?
Yeah. Well, first off, I'm going to tell our archive listeners that you might want to listen live next week because we will be posting clips in the chat. And it is going to be all about music, pagan musicians, and music that is inspired by paganism. So we thought that would be a really fun episode for our listeners out there and for us too, because we all like music around here. So,
and we're actually trying to get some of the artists to actually come on with us and not just be us playing music. So hopefully we'll have
right.
some of the artists on with us and we'll be able to chat with them. We're still trying to get a hold of some people, so that's still in the works, or we would announce some people, but we don't have anyone right now. So, I guess we should say goodnight, everyone, or good morning, or wherever you're at, and everyone have a blessed evening, and
be safe out there, y'all.
Serenity, you want to say goodnight?
Oh, I didn't realize it was my turn. Good night, everybody. Be blessed.
Good night, everyone. And I actually found myself not too ready, but I'm going to play a song. I guess I'm going to play, I'm trying to find something, sorry. How about Coyote Run? I am going to play, or actually I'm going to play a song by Celtic called Sally Garden. And again, I guess it's by a band in Celtic, that's what it says, and the song is called Sally Garden. So I'm going to play that, and Reverend Dawn will be on next with, I believe, Reverend Terry. So everyone have a good night.
came around during our commercial break. And now, back to our show.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from beautiful Florida. And tonight is Thursday, which means it's my night here on Pagans Tonight Radio Network, and time for the Pagan Pundit Show and the Corellian Power Hour. And I want to say hello to everyone who is listening and everyone who is in the chat room. And as you know, if you follow the program, what we do on Thursday nights is that I take questions from listeners. And if you are listening, you can call in via our call-in number, 347-308-8222. And if you do that, make sure that you do hit one so that I'll know you want to talk. Or if you happen to be in the chat room, you can type your question directly into the chat room, and whatever you want to discuss, we shall discuss. And I see we have a number of our regulars with us tonight, and hello to you. Hello to any new people who are here. And, well, gee, there are a few things we can talk about tonight. And one of them is that everyone this week has been up in arms about Fox News. And if you watch my daily vlog, you'll know I did make a comment about it because so many people were asking me to. And there are a few things to say, and one of them is that it really was a very bad story. But one of the things about Fox that has surprises me is that people are actually expecting them to be journalists. And to be honest, Fox hasn't really been in the business of journalism for several years. But it was a very insulting story, and I certainly do feel that we should make our displeasure as a community known. I agree with those people who would like to see an apology. I don't know if we will see it, but I agree with it. And what I recommend to people, and what I definitely am recommending at this moment, is that you undertake direct communication with Fox News. There are a number of ways that you can do this. Most notably sending them an email and telling them what you think of the situation. And some of the email addresses you can use include friends@foxnews.com, newsmanager@foxnews.com, and foxnewstips@foxnews.com. And all of these will go directly to them. And they may or may not be seen by people who make policy, but they'll be seen by somebody. And another thing you can do, if you have a Twitter account, you can Twitter your opinion directly to the people who are on the Fox Friends, I guess it's Fox and Friends program. And, you know, I was being interviewed earlier today for a different radio program, and they asked about this subject. And I did point out that, you know, there was a time that we would have been grateful that this was the worst they said. But times have changed, and this really was inappropriate, and the people involved, at least one of them, obviously knew better. I was reading a little while ago, one of the comments they made that there was that there were more Zoroastrians in the U.S. than Wiccans, whereas apparently there are about 11,000 Zoroastrians versus several hundred thousand Wiccans, so not exactly the case. Of course, there are no really good reliable numbers for how many Wiccans there are in the country. And plus, then there's always question Wiccan versus pagan, and which numbers are you looking at? But either way, there are more of us than the Zoroastrians, meaning no disrespect to the Zoroastrians, who are very ancient and generally very friendly. One of the things that I think... I have found, I don't want to denigrate anyone's efforts, but I really will say that internet petitions really are not the most effective tool to be using for this. Direct communication is much more effective. If you want to sign a petition, that's fine. One of the problems is that there are several of them. which means none of them would have the strength it could have had. So I would say it really is best to look for ways to communicate with them directly. And, of course, the other thing is to try to use it in so far as possible as a teaching moment. And rather than being angry, say, we realize you don't know this, but these are the facts. And it would be very appropriate not only to communicate that to Fox News, but also to blog about it, to put it out anywhere where public comments are welcome, and basically use it as an occasion of outreach to the wider world about what we actually are. Not focus so much on what they had to say, but rather on what we as a community actually are, and also showing support for the university that was including our holidays. Another thing I have to remark, I have not read the actual university handbook that started the story, because the original story was about a university that's included Wiccan holidays. And the Fox News report was so muddled, you can't really tell what the thing says. At one point, they said 20% of the holidays listed were Wiccan. On another occasion, they said there were 20 Wiccan holidays listed. And I am not certain which it is, but I've heard a lot of people say we don't have 20 holidays. And I must point out that actually, if you take the eight Sabbats and the 12 full moons, there is your 20 holidays. Arguably, if you include new moons, it's 32. And of course, this is a small number compared to Christian holidays, which start with 52 Sundays a year. But this is a minor side point. But in general, in directing any communications toward Fox News, please remember to be calm, to be well-spoken, to be very sane in what you write, and not to express anger, but rather clear thinking. And I think that you will find that would be the most successful course of action. So, we take questions from our listeners. So if anyone has anything they would like to say or discuss or talk about, please feel free to list it in the chat room. Now, Lauren West remarks that the guide lists 43 holidays, and the eight pagan Sabbats would be roughly 20%. So that probably is what they have done. Now, Greengate says, Chancellor, we see the divine as imminent, and yet we speak of transcendence, and how do we reconcile this? And, well, that's jumping straight in the deep water, isn't it? Well, you know, the way that I would describe that, there's a reason that I would describe myself as being a panentheist versus a pantheist. And that is that I believe that deity is within everything that exists, but it also extends beyond what physically exists. And I would regard the two as being one in the moment, but not necessarily one in the final analysis. And you know, this is a fairly deep water question. And as I say, I do not I perceive the created multiverse as being one with deity being imminent, but I don't perceive the created multiverse as being all that exists. So that would be my answer to how I would recognize or how I would reconcile both immanence and transcendence. And now, Blue Fire Witch, going back to Fox News for a moment, mentions that this same book includes Shinto holidays and Baha'i holidays as well. And the Baha'is are actually a fairly large movement in the U.S. Shinto, I don't know that Shinto is widely practiced in the U.S. I don't know that it isn't either. Not that that really has anything to do with it, except that that was part of the Fox News take on the story. Personally, I I think that it's wonderful to see this kind of inclusiveness, and I think that it points to very good possibilities in the future. And I see that we are at 20 past the hour, so I'm going to have a little piece of music, and we'll come back to discuss more of the witchness of the lie and the nature of God, the universe, and everything. And what shall we listen to? And why don't we listen to Josh Woodward's Pompeii? I have no idea what this is, but it must be interesting.
The last remains of Pompeii burn, the gadabout just returned to see the ashes covering the town. Empires burned and cities fell, while lovers kissed and said farewell and laid their fragile bodies on the ground. But I'm not scared to burn. To dust I will return again if you'll stay by my side. I'll lay down and I won't hide from fate. Growing colder, embers that had hotly smoldered settled in to lifeless dust below. The gadabout was still alive, but not another soul survived. So through the blackened streets he walked alone. But I'm not scared to burn. To dust I will return again if you'll stay by my side. I'll lay down and I won't hide from fate.
Don Lewis coming to you from beautiful Florida. and we've been discussing immanence and transcendence as well as Fox News, or in other words, the sublime and the ridiculous. And we have a question in the chat room from Wild Silver Wolf. And the question is, Reverend Don, seeing as you do tarot, which card character would you be and why? And actually, the answer to that is I suspect that would be the Temperance card. And perhaps even a little bit more, the Crowley version, which was named not Temperance, but Art. And the reason for either one is that Temperance represents two different things. It represents working on the self to improve it, and also taking the middle path. And I'm very big on the idea of the union of opposites, which is what Temperance is. Temperance also can be taken to connect to the alchemical wedding and to many ideas about the uniting of opposites. And the union of opposites is a very prominent part of my personal point of view. It's also a very Corellian thing. And I tend to try to go for the middle ground whenever possible. And so Temperance would be the answer. And let's see, do we have any other questions coming into the chat room? Do we have anyone who wishes to talk? We have, of course, been regularly doing the daily vlog. And today our question had to do with Egyptian iconography. And I don't know that we particularly need to go into Egyptian iconography at the moment. But some of the other recent questions we've had, and we'll do Egyptian iconography, I guess, if people want. But some of the other questions that we have had, a few days ago we had the question from Dakota, whether it is better to use established tarot spreads or to create your own. And Dakota actually asked me this at the South Florida Renaissance Fair. And Dakota is the apprentice to Elric the Apothecary, who you'll see on Magic TV sometimes. And Dakota's question, whether it's better to use established tarot spreads because they have a long history and certain ones have been favored for certain reasons, or whether it's better to make your own, my answer really was that one, you should do what works well for you. Some people are going to find that that the structure given to them by specific spreads will be useful. And particularly when you're first learning, I think you should use those established spreads to come to know the process of reading with tarot. I personally found after a comparatively short time that I really was not finding them all that helpful. And what I usually do when I read for a person is I just have the person draw cards, and usually three at a time. So I suppose you could call it a three-card spread, but I really don't think of it that way. And I just keep drawing cards until we get what is needed. But what I would say to another person is first learn the spreads, but then decide for yourself if you like established spreads, if you want to create your own, if you don't want to use them at all. Because I know successful psychics who follow all of these different different choices, and some use very traditional layouts, some use layouts that are unique to them, and some use none at all. And in general, I think that's how one should approach metaphysics. First, you learn what you're doing, then you adapt it to your needs. And Lauren West asks, what book I would suggest to people new to paganism? And, you know, I would have to say that my answer to that would in part depend on what it is that they are looking to learn. There are a lot of good books out there. I don't know that there's one that I would recommend, although Cunningham, almost anything by Cunningham would be good. And I believe it was Witchcraft Today that he wrote many years ago, but it is still equally good today. even, what is it, 30 years on. So I would recommend that one. I'd recommend my own, of course. I would recommend The Call of Isis, but that has to do with my own preferences. Some people might or might not get as much from it. Drawing Down the Moon is still good because it gives a sampling of the diversity available in the community, which many other books do not. The books I would not recommend are the ones that do not take into account the diversity of the community. And if you're reading through a book and they keep telling you this is the only way it's ever done, you probably should be taking it with a grain of salt, because there is nothing that has only one way it's ever done. And we have a question from Greengate. Do you think that people often build their own labyrinth to get lost in and grow their own minotaur to be afraid of? And I think that often would be an understatement. I think that most people do build their own labyrinth. Even people who have a high degree of self-realization can still do this. And, of course, when they build their own labyrinth, it's the habits in their lives. And sometimes people will build their daily habits so rigidly that it becomes a labyrinth or a prison of a kind, and induces a kind of tunnel vision, cutting off the rest of the world from their sight. And in that sort of labyrinth, there often is a minotaur, and the minotaur is usually an illusion. I won't say always, but usually an illusion. And more often than not, if there's a minotaur in your labyrinth, you're better off to face it, because chances are it will disappear fairly easily. And Lauren West says, I am making videos for people new to paganism on YouTube, and I am going to do a book review for beginners. And I would say then again that Cunningham and Witchcraft Today would be a very good book to review. The others I mentioned as well. But the one thing that I would recommend to anyone who is new to the movement is to realize that the extreme diversity of the movement versus the very neat systems often presented in books, which are frequently not mirrored in reality. And Wild Silver Wolf asks, what do you think people who have no spirituality or spiritual practice are missing, if anything? And, you know, depending on exactly what you mean, I don't know that they're necessarily missing anything. We're all on our own journey. And there's an old saying, not all who wander are lost. And people will find their fulfillment in many different ways. What is absolutely necessary to one may not be necessary at all to another. And so I would not presume to assume that a person who did not have an overt spirituality was necessarily missing anything. I would assume that they are where they need to be at this moment. Whether that is where they will stay or not is a whole other question, but not really one that I would necessarily want to make an assumption on. And Blue Fire Witch remarks that her husband, Priest Christopher, has written a book on what we can learn from Theseus, which I imagine is probably a very interesting book. And Liz Hamilton remarks, Lord Don, speaking of Egyptian things, there is a photo from Reverend Terry Power's travels of a statue in Wafi, Dubai. Now, I was wondering if it is indeed of the goddess Mut. And there is a link. So I've clicked on the link, and I don't know that it'll do anyone any good who can't see the link, because it's not one that would be easily repeated, because it's a long string of letters and numbers. And it has not actually given me a photo. Mut is an interesting goddess. She was paired with Amon as his consort, although his original consort had been Amonet. But Mut was paired with him later, although Mut, you know, I think there would be a good argument as to whether Mut is a name or a title, because in Egyptian, Mut simply means mother. And I'm not entirely certain that the goddess Mut might not simply be the mother goddess. And certainly, she was heavily identified with most other Egyptian goddesses, although most Egyptian deities were. And now, Greengate remarks, people who have no spirituality may be in a phase that doesn't require one. Each follows a different road, and, you know, I completely agree with that. Blue Fire Witch points out that Demeter also means the mother, and this is absolutely true. Demeter also means the mother, and I would argue again that it may not exactly have begun as a name so much as a title. And it's also interesting to note that in certain northern areas, Demeter was shown with a horse's head. And also, hello? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Can we hear me now? I see that Bondgirl 007 in the chat room says that she can hear me, so I'm going to assume that people can hear me. And I was remarking that the goddess Demeter in Greek religion was, in certain northern territories, shown with a horse's head, which arguably ties her to some of the Celtic mother goddesses. And a very interesting figure. And I see that we've come to the bottom of the hour. And so I'm going to go ahead and play the piece of music that I started when I thought nobody could hear me. The Ogre Dance by the Gypsy Nomads.
Ready.
Bend. The cockle's blood around her flowed, thrice flashed evil to and fro. Thrice round the cursed fire she got, thrice tied within her hair the knots. In widder shins she broke the good and damned the old gray Sherwood. And though the horror then prevailed, my happy home began to fail. My crops were blasted, ewes all died, my wife she withered at my side. My well went foul, my horse went lame, and all in Asmodeus' name. And in the name of God and good, you must duck Biddy Sherwood.
Whisper thy vow and tell you right, I stand within the purest light of clear intent and godliness. You must believe I'm innocent. Ah. I've mixed some herbs to heal their woe, I've cured their ill. God does know, delivered babies strong and good, they called me Goody Sherwood.
Hair. She fouls the ground she treads upon and curses those she glances on with an evil eye that brings no good. You must duck Biddy Sherwood. Did not drown, they brought her back and into town.
Three,
accused and slandered, racked with grief, the magistrates gave no relief. They jailed her there for 7 years, despite her pleas and all her tears.
Then send us an email at pagans tonight@gmail.com with the subject title
Ask a Priest, and we'll certainly consider using your question as the topic of our discussion. That email again is pagans tonight@gmail.com with the subject line, Ask a Priest. Thanks for sticking around and tuning in through our commercial break. And now, back to the show.
And we're back, and this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from beautiful Florida. And we've had a couple of questions in the chat room, and one of them comes from Greengate, who asked my opinion of whether or not the nature of incarnation is that in the end we are merely avatars of our true self, and if so, how do we reconcile that with the idea that this reality is merely an illusion? And in the end, I think I would say that our physical existence is an avatar of our true self. And how do we reconcile that with the idea that this life is an illusion? I'm not entirely sure I see them as being in need of reconciliation. It depends on how you're interpreting avatar, I suppose, because, you know, in many of the computer games that exist now, the character that you use to interact is called an avatar. And it's interesting that the development of technology has, in some ways, given us words and models to describe what we've been saying spiritually for a long time. And when I say that we are an avatar of ourselves, of our true self, of our soul, of our monad, it's in that vein, to some extent, that I'm using the term. And I would say, on one hand, that physical existence is an illusion. On the other hand, I would say that there are worlds within worlds. And how much an illusion and how much a reality depends on where you're putting your consciousness and the level you're looking at it from. And that it is it's very dependent upon the position that you're coming from. Now, Greengate remarks that the term avatar is used in Hinduism. I believe it comes from Hinduism and refers to, as a general rule, an incarnation of a deity. I suppose it could be used for the incarnation of a soul. And but, you know, in modern English, the term has taken on other meanings as well. I would use it as a semi-independent expression. And we also have the question from Wild Silver Wolf. And that question was, what are your thoughts on how science views magic or the practices of paganism? And, you know, I have to be careful in answering that because those views are changing. And a lot of things that we've been saying for a long time, they're starting to say. And the distance between these two poles is narrowing. However, I think that certainly from the stereotypical atheistic science point of view, my opinion of the way in which they see metaphysics is that we violate their religious principles and so must not exist. And I had someone suggesting that I should take the Randy challenge recently, but, you know, my answer to that would be that I don't believe for a moment that there is anything possible in reality that could ever meet what would be required to pass that challenge, because the needs would change according to the performance, because they could not permit it to exist, no matter how clearly manifest it was before them, because it would destroy their worldview. And I think that that's true of atheistic science in general. Now, as I said, scientific opinions are changing because they're finding that the universe actually is a lot closer to what we've been saying all along. I think that changes what the answer to this question would have been. But I do think that Bluefire, which agrees with this statement and says you can't prove anything to someone that they do not want to see. And that's exactly the thing. You know, I'm also a believer in the idea that the observed is not separate from the observer. or the observer is not separate from the observed, which adds to this even more so. I would say to some extent you cannot, two people can look at the same thing and see something different depending on what they want to see. And after Fove asks, how many universes does it take to screw in a light bulb? And it's an interesting version of the light bulb question. And I believe there are light bulbs in most of them. And so I would have to say that I don't necessarily have an answer because I don't know the total number of universes. But I do know that it took a long time for that first one to come around. But going back to science versus metaphysics, one of the things that we really do see in these recent years is that certain branches of science are getting an awful lot closer to our own metaphysical worldview. And some other branches of science are still doing what they've always done, which is pat you on the head, tell you to take two aspirin, and that it's all in your imagination. And it seems to me that for some branches of science, that is the standard answer for everything that doesn't fit the mold. It must be your imagination. And, you know, that just really isn't the answer, the truth of everything. Not everything that does not fit the mold is imagination. Certainly, people do sometimes imagine things, and I would not for a moment argue against that. And just as you cannot show someone something they don't wish to see, sometimes it's all too easy to see what you do wish to see. But that doesn't begin to explain everything. And the ongoing study of consciousness and the developing studies of physics, again, are moving a lot closer to points of view we have held for a very long time. And I see we're down to the last 10 minutes of our program. Well, and Greengate, of course, says, Chancellor, they may be correct. It is all in our imagination. We create reality with it. And yes, you know, I would have to agree with that. And, you know, it's like Dumbledore said to Harry Potter in the last book. Yes, Harry, it is all in your head, but that doesn't mean it isn't real. And so in that sense, yes, in the sense that reality is the creation of the interplay of spirit and matter, your imagination does play a large role in it, but you also know that's not quite what I meant. But yes, in that sense, I would have to agree that would be true. Now, going down through the music, is there something really interesting that I can find? There's so much now on the switchboard that things I want to find I often can't. And so I take the first thing that seems interesting. And let's see, what looks interesting today? La 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 la. Let's see, we did the Bollywood Bop last week, so I'm not going to do it again. But I enjoyed the Bollywood Bop very much. How about Kudu and the Order of the Owl? And we'll be back.
books, Witch School's first, second, and third degree lessons, ritual and theory and practice, and living the Wiccan life, available from Llewellyn. Everything you always wanted to know about God, the universe, and everything, available at a bookstore near you. And we're back, and this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from beautiful Florida. And it's been a lovely hour, and I have a couple of last comments to make. One is that Sparrow in the chat room, who is from the Main Street Universe program, remarks that the angriest people he has ever debated are the James Randi followers, and that their fear shines through in their arguments. And he goes on to say that their position is an emotional one. And that kind of is what I'm saying, that that when people's entire worldview is tied up in one thing being true, anything that's going to challenge that is going to be almost impossible to get through to them, at least in a combative way. There may be other ways to get it through, but they're definitely not going to be open to simply having it proven to them, because proof really has nothing to do with an emotional position. So we've come to the end of our hour, and I want to encourage you to take a few moments and send an email to newsmanager@foxnews.com or friends@foxnews.com, or consider looking up the Twitter accounts of the different reporters and contacting them directly. Because it is important to let them know that this really is not acceptable in this day and age, the story that they did over the weekend. And this will be much more effective than some of the things that are easier to do. Sometimes you have to take that extra step. And although I do notice that some of the petitions are getting some notice, I don't know that they're getting any notice from Fox. Direct communication will. Also, take some time after Fove suggests you should ask them when Archie Bunker's show is premiering as a journalistic news show, but I'm not sure I'd recommend doing that in this particular communication. The other thing you can do is you can write blogs, you can make comments, you can take this occasion to make public statements about what we are versus what we are not in a very calm and a very positive manner. All communication should be calm and positive. And I hope you've enjoyed the hour, and I've enjoyed talking to you. I'll be back again next Thursday night. And until next time, may you blessed be.
Thank you for joining us on WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. You can hear us every night right here on Blog Talk Radio, or download us later on iTunes. Please check our schedule for accurate showtimes. For all questions, comments, or show suggestions, you can email us at pagans tonight@gmail.com. And let us know how we're doing. We'd love to hear from you. You can also visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on LiveJournal. We invite you to tune in again tomorrow night. Good night, and blessed be.